Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and I think we need to do some reporting on, there's a lot of fast-moving stories. There's some that are just hanging over us like a heavy, ugly cloud. I guess we may as well start with the matter of the impeachment of our former president, by our American Congress, which of course takes up Canadian news space and is observed by everybody, and well, rightfully so to some extent, but it's a rather pathetic situation when you consider how much attention is paid in Canada to this ongoing wrestling match between the Democratic Party, Republican Party. Karl Marx pointed out long ago that these two parties have been there since the beginning of the country, and they're like gangs. And we've said this in the past on the Taylor Report that there is some. If we take a look at the current issue of the impeachment of Trump, what you have to notice is that. The frequency, it's kind of like talking about hurricanes and climate change. The frequency of resorting to impeachment, the dramatic step, is increasing very rapidly. And it got kicked off with Richard Nixon, who was a very despised figure in American politics. He was... He had been Eisenhower's vice president, and nobody thought very highly of him, but he was known to be a master of backroom stuff. And as he came back into politics after several defeats, a lot of American liberals had all they could take of him, and the Democratic Party had control of the House of Representatives and of the Senate. And with the Watergate matter, they decided that this was enough for impeachment, and they went for it. And that was the first attempt at impeachment since the impeachment brought against Andrew Johnson, who had become president when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. There's a long interval. Basically, there was this idea, kind of a non-gentleman's agreement, that not to resort to that because it can be very divisive. And I'm sorry to say, principle is never involved. I mean, it's just always played out that it's a crime and we have to, you know, identify the crime and we have a due process. But you're dealing with institutions of so-called elected representatives. They belong to parties. And, you know, Lenin and others talked about democratic centralism. They didn't know the half of it. When it comes to Democrats and Republicans, it's heavy going. You don't cross the party. At the end of the day, it really is an exercise. It's an argument about who has the most votes. And in the case of the House of Representatives, they're the ones who can bring the charge and bring impeachment, and then the Senate has to hear it. In the case of Nixon, the Democrats had control of both houses, and he was in a jackpot for sure. Besides that, there really had been a break-in at the Watergate in the hotel, and it was a strange episode in American history. Very interesting detail. Ronald Reagan, who was then rising to become a powerful man in Republican politics, he called Nixon and told him, don't resign in the face of what Nixon saw was going to be inevitable. He urged him not to step down. He said, don't give him the pleasure, basically. And it's interesting because in many ways, and I've said this on the Taylor Report before, I think it's important to share with it, is that Reagan is really the godfather of this, of the this thing now that people are saying is a Trump phenomenon. But Reagan very much manifested that, particularly the super patriotism part, the craziness with flags. All it's Reagan that made, you know, morning in America, sunshine in America, new day, new hope, America number one, and all that. Super patriotism, that was Reagan's prime card. And curiously enough, when Reagan was first wanted to run for president, this man Stone, who's is somewhat prominent now, because he's a Trump guy, he had started off as a Reagan guy, and he said he went to Washington, and pardon me, New York, to get to solicit the help of Donald Trump's father. And he said he met Donald, and Donald said, "What's this all about?" And he told him, "It's who Reagan was, what he's going to do." And he said, Donald immediately said, "I'm in. Whatever my dad said," he said, "I'm going to help you." That was the beginning of a partnership. By the way, the connecting link, according to this political professional, Stone, the link was Roy Cohn. He said when he asked Roy Cohn, "Who should I see? I'm going to go back east." America is very divided, east, west, north, south, political powers. So I'm going back east. Who should I talk to? He said, "Go and see Trump." That was not Trump, Donald. That was the old man. Anyway, the thesis I have here is that they are now, they've gotten into kind of a round robin thing where, okay, when you had control of the House of Representatives, you brought a impeachment against our guy, so we're going to bring it against yours. So that's when in the sequence, they went after Clinton. The Republicans decided to get him because they got control of the House of Representatives. And now it's, come around, and it's Democrats' turn. It isn't good, I hate to give them advice, but it's not good for their country. And I'm really sorry for the American people that they're caught in a kind of perfect storm of two really unsavory groups of people. And I've been watching the proceedings, and to hear all this silliness about of the people, by the people, for the people. America's a plutocracy. It's dominated by money. You can't get near these guys. They have their fortunes are behind them. So it's not of the people, it's of the corporations, by the corporations, or by the monopoly. And everybody knows that's a sacred system. And of course, in a way, it's sort of like the religious notion, you're not supposed to mention God by name. So you're not supposed to say, General Motors or Standard Oil or whatever, or any of the big banking operations, Goldman Sachs, who really dominate the running of American society. And they vet one another for membership in their parties in such a way that you're really tied up. You're stuck. And, you have the odd one, like Bernie is an odd one. And we have these four women, the group called the Squad, which is quickly becoming kind of a joke because they made a lot of promises themselves about fighting the system and challenging Nancy Pelosi and all that. And, well, they bailed out on that, but they're quite happy to become battering rams for the Democratic Party against the Republican. That's one thing, is it should be noted, is that the parties themselves are toxic. the people don't really have a lot of faith in them for a very simple reason. They really don't feel, they're not connected to them. There is no, these so-called representatives of the people, very few of them have what you would call a social base. The party owns the base in the sense that they can, and they control what you can say to people. So there's an alienation that goes on between the representatives. And that's the sort of the underlying illness. It's really too bad that there is not an honest third or fourth party who might say, you know, you two have been leading us down the wrong road. You two are too concerned about lining your own pockets or rewarding your friends and raising some other issues, but that isn't possible. At this latest matter of the impeachment and the exercise on everybody's, you know, you can follow it. Oh, they hear all the arguments. It bothers me, and I think everybody here, Canadians and others, should be concerned at watching how a story is manufactured. I was surprised that the member of Congress making the argument that officers, police officers, had died. And I was really surprised. He read out the names, and I thought, I've been trying to establish through just following journalists, trying to figure out who had died and in what manner. They said that a officer, the one everybody knows, his name is Sicknick, Officer Sicknick, a Capitol Police officer. I've pointed out he was a Trump supporter. There's a certain chagrin to his shade, finding all these people claiming to like him and saying he's a hero to them. He clearly, according to his Facebook page and all that, was a Trump guy. I also heard a black Capitol policeman talking about how he had had racial epithets tossed at him, and he said it bothered him that so many of his fellow officers actually voted for Trump. Keep that in the back of your mind when you think about it. Now, Sicknick, I misreported on the Taylor Report, because I had read it in the New York Times, that Sicknick had been died as a result of being struck in the head by a fire extinguisher. Like a lot of other people, I watched the footage and I saw a fire extinguisher being thrown and others had seen it. So I kind of assumed that must have been him, because I was told he had been struck. But then it's become clear that the one that we all saw, the fire extinguisher, didn't involve Officer Sicknick. He is sort of the prime figure. We've had his remains and, pardon me, his ashes on display, and President Biden went, our new president, went and stood and saluted him. It is a fact. They haven't really had established how he died. The general public, particularly if you listen to that congressman making his argument, you would believe that Officer Sicknick had been, you know, fighting with those maniacs at the door or somewhere like that, and as a result of the stress and strain had died. But it turns out that he died a day later, that he had returned, and I did report this on the Taylor Report, but I also said that, you know, apparently he'd been hit in the head. They say, actually, there's no evidence of head trauma. The working theory now is that he was sprayed, because he apparently, after the events, had sent text messages to family saying that he was okay, except for, you know, all he'd been, he said, pepper sprayed a couple times. Now they seem to think that it might have been this thing called bear spray. But even there, well, they don't have an autopsy. There is, and they don't have, they have yet to name the people who might have done that to him. But of course, as you know, if you're going to make a case, you're going to have to show there's a connection. You have to have the cause of death, which they don't have. He died the following day. The events happened on Wednesday. He returned to the police station. While there, I think it's established, who knows. Here we are a month later, and the simplest things are not known. But at any rate, he apparently collapsed and then was taken to a hospital. And the family found out from media that he had died the following evening on the 7th. Here's this congressman going for the ultimate. I call it gilding the lily. You have a riot. You have obvious, terrible conduct. You have plenty of grounds to arrest people, and particularly anybody carrying any type of weapon. And if they can be shown to have done something, okay, you got them. But to make this into the story of Officer Sicknick is actually, this is where a lot of people have problems with mainstream media and political party leaders who basically play with us a bit. You know, to my mind, Sicknick should not be in the middle of this story. It's unfortunate he died, but you know, the question is, died where, of what? Which we haven't been told. And then they added two more. There's now an Officer Smith, Jeffrey Smith, and he was mentioned on the House, in the Senate chamber, as part of the prosecution. Officer Smith is mentioned. Well, Officer Smith committed suicide days later, and to put him in, it's unfortunate, that's a tragedy. But it's presuming an awful lot, I didn't hear the congressman make the case of how the events of the 6th had anything to do with the suicide. Surely Officer Smith had been at other events. He certainly had been involved with other suspects and having to do policeman's work. So we don't know. Nobody said that there's any connection between his suicide and that and those events. Third officer, and again, the congressman mentioned all three. He mentioned Howard Liebenkood, 51 years old, and reminded everybody how we all loved these officers, you know, because he was the Capitol Police. He committed suicide. And there's no demonstration, certainly not by that congressman, as to what the connection is. But we all know that it sure works as a way to say three officers died. I get it. Three officers died. One of them had some connection, and he was there and doing his job. And then he died a day later, and we don't know whether it was what it was. The other two, actually, I don't think anybody's produced any footage to show us what they were doing, if anything. And they did commit suicide. So I think if you got such a strong case, why are you going to these, you know, to the talking about the officers and you know, they frankly playing a violin on this thing? There's ample evidence. If you want to say there was violence, you want to say the president incited it, go right ahead. But this part of drawing in these names in this way and associating them with this event tells me this: you don't respect your case enough to, you know how to separate the details. And so let's go back to who we've talked about it before in the Taylor Report. It's worthwhile talking about. Is that there were two demonstrators who or rioters, if you like, who died. One of them was a former who was a veteran who'd done several tours of duty. And this is something everybody needs to remark on. There's a lot of veterans around, and they seem to all, well, let's put it this way, a lot of them like to wear Trump hats. And they seem to want to go on being in the military when they're not. But anyhow, the one person who died violently with deliberate act was, of course, Ashley Babbitt. And she was shot. And in terms, if you're into the business of quelling riots, it seemed to work magic, because that was, the retreat took place right away. Though there was aspects of that worth looking at, standing quite nearby her when she was shot, to her rear and down the stairwell was a SWAT team, who then immediately assembled in front of the doors after the shot was fired. That's curious. Just because somebody ought to give a dispassionate accounting of time and place of everybody without looking to prosecute. Just simply get it all straight as to what occurred. This is the Taylor Report. We're reviewing this case. Again, I think it is sort of, this is political theater of the most depressing type, because the Senate is not going to impeach Donald Trump. He is a, I didn't take that call. Donald Trump is not going to be impeached, because to do it, the Republican Party would have to commit suicide itself. Today seems to be a day to talk about this. The fact is that he got 74 million votes. He got more votes in 2016, pardon me, in 2020 than he got in 2016. We ought to be focused on what is going on with the American plutocracy republic, that they're so divided like this. And for 3 years, Donald Trump did a number of outrageous things which the Democrats liked. They didn't have a problem with his moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. And Biden says, no, we're going to leave it there. Before, that was verboten. He didn't do that. Everybody said, no, you can't do that. No, we won't do it. Oh, he did it. And now the Democrats come in and say, oh, yeah, no. And then he said he recognized Israel's claim to the Golan Heights. And the new Secretary of State says, well, you know, so long as Assad, President Assad, is in Syria, we're not going to do anything about that. We're not going to change that policy. So, you know, this is curious. Now, let's talk about another funny thing. The Democrats got the joke's on them. They decided to say that China is our, and they call China our adversary. The word adversary is probably the stupidest thing that they could do. China's a country. You have business with it, a lot of business, by the way. And you say you want free trade. I know you're lying, but anyhow, you say you want free trade with them. Trump wanted it. Biden says he wants it. But then you call them an adversary, which tells me you're either, you know, brain dead, or you're just nattering propaganda. But anyhow, the subject of Hong Kong came up. And they said, well, this is really embarrassing, because the Chinese point out that, say that Americans are hypocrites, that when they react to a demonstration at the Capitol, it's, you know, it's like the most sacred thing that ever happened. But when the Chinese government responsible for the security of Hong Kong acts to defend the Parliament of Hong Kong, and it's there, by the way, it's real, when they act to do that, Nancy Pelosi cheered the rioters who broke in and destroyed everything and wrote on the walls and desecrated it and made wrote all kinds of things that they thought would be appropriately insulting to the People's Republic of China. She called it beautiful. And of course, so did Trump. But here's a further joke on the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi and that silly man making that silly case at the impeachment show where he knows the outcome already. The Hong Kong rioters are Trump admirers. The man Jimmy Lai, the billionaire who's locked up at the moment in Hong Kong because of various crimes, he gave $2 million, according to the record, to the Trump campaign. And when they really wanted to really show who they were, the demonstrators, who are called pro-democracy, loved to take over the streets of Hong Kong and hold up photographs of Donald Trump. And these were lovely propaganda posters. Somebody paid a lot of money for them. It was the body of Rambo with the head of Donald Trump. And of course, behind that, they were flying their British flags. So Nancy Pelosi thought that was beautiful because she longs for the good old days of the opium wars and the taking and the sending gunboats into the harbors of China and saying, guess what? We're here. We're taking this port. And you're going to sign this treaty, whether you like it or not. That's what we do. You get it? So Nancy, like the Canadian Parliament, still thinks that we rule the roost, or should, in China, Hong Kong, Taiwan. They call it Taiwan. It used to be Formosa. It was under Japanese occupation. That's a long story. But they all look foolish because, in fact, they did. They cheered on, and they always cheer on anybody making trouble. If it's in Iran and there's a demonstration, they all begin to Twitter and shout and to threaten Iran with sanctions. They say, oh, you know, you terrible mullahs. And you say, well, how come you're so interested in the outcome of the election if the country is run by mullahs? If make up your mind what your theory is, because someone claimed to have done better in an Iranian election than they had apparently done, and the U.S. was angry and turned it into part of the whole sanction exercise. Then 4 or 6 years go by, and there's another election. And then a guy they liked got elected, or they liked better than the other one. So they can't get their story straight. It's all just a rolling thunder of righteous indignation backed up by nothing, backed up by sweet nothing, except that their hostility to other peoples around the world. Now, of course, they're having their own little show. And by the way, the expression show trial is a common one in the U.S. They love to talk about show trials. But what else is this? If you know the outcome before you start, then it must be a show trial. And what is it you're trying to do? And so it's some type of political exercise to get the leg up or the advantage on their opponent. So you have these two parties who, as I say, it's kind of the analogy is of the climate change, is that there seem to be more hurricanes, there seem to be more disasters. Well, there seem to be more impeachments, and they can't talk themselves out of it because they've, as mentioned before, they've tasted blood, and they're starting to like this, and they, of course, they all get a lot of attention. But they ain't doing the country any good. None at all. This is a very dangerous tendency taking place in the U.S. And I don't think anybody can help them. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And we'll take a break, and we're going to talk. When I come back, we'll talk about the situation in Myanmar which of course has got everybody scratching their heads. A lead into that, I'll just say the Canadian Parliament gave a citizenship, special honorary citizenship to Suu Kyi, and said, boy, we like you, Suu Kyi. You are a Nobel Prize winner. We all want our pictures taken with you. And they assumed she was going to be the neo-colonial trick that they like so much. She was going to, you know, bait the Chinese, and she was going to do all the things that the Canadian Parliament wanted her to do. The Canadian Parliament thinks it's their business to micromanage China, Myanmar, Venezuela. Got to micromanage Venezuela. And so she didn't do what they wanted. And she took some decisions. Canadian Parliament decided, okay, she's no good. She's not a Democrat. We're going to take her honorary citizenship away. And of course, the same group of trained SEALs that gave her the honorary citizenship all assembled and stood and quacked at each other. Do SEALs quack? Anyhow, flapped their wings at each other and took her citizenship away. And then Bob Rae and others said, oh, you see, you don't play with Canada. We gave you citizenship and let us down. So now we don't like you anymore, and you can't come to the into the lunchroom and sit with us, because we've made up our minds and we're principled people. So then, what, 6, 8 months, 10, a year go by, but and the Myanmar military decides they don't like her either. So they have a coup. So the Canadian Parliament is kind of left saying, well, we're going to have to go back to calling her the champion of democracy and talk how much we love her, except that we don't love her because we say we didn't, and we took her citizenship, and now the Myanmar military says, you're right, she's no good, we're going to remove her. So, you know, here's a little lesson. Don't meddle in the internal affairs of other countries. It is not up to the Canadian Parliament to meddle, but they love it. Partly because there's not much going on. They have to, on foreign affairs, they just basically take orders to the United States. It's a vassal parliament. But they think, well, we want to kind of be out in front as a vassal. We want to be the dog that barks the loudest. That way the boss will notice us. So they took the citizenship from Suu Kyi. And now the military has taken the presidency or the leadership of the country from Suu Kyi. And they'll have to wait for a prompt from some direction to tell them how they, what they should do next. Anyway, they've embarrassed themselves, embarrassed Canada. And they acted on behalf of our true Congress, which is in the United States, and our true president, who is there. And we hope he likes us, and we can't wait for his calls. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We'll be back in a little bit. Thank you.